Well, hello everybody. We are beginning our esoteric astrology adventure number 42. And this really takes us now to the beginning of the actual book, into a new section. We have been studying the introduction for some 90 pages and some 41 programs, some of them a little truncated, but most of them about an hour in duration. And it is my intention now to begin the meat of the book in a way, from page 90 to page 404. As I do this, you know, I'm well aware that if I were able to take the time to think carefully about every point before speaking about it, perhaps there would be a somewhat greater accuracy. But the time constraints at the moment prevent me from doing this, and so I hope that the effect of talking the books with you and the ideas offered may be of value. Anyway, we begin with Master DK saying the spiritual effects of the zodiacal constellations, and he's going to go backwards, what we would call retrogressing through the signs. I think, you know, that is somewhat to grasp our attention, because the idea of going from Aries to Pisces, through Pisces to Taurus, is quite unusual in ordinary astrology, which usually precedes Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and so forth. But he wants to explain that there are different ways of responding to the zodiacal constellations, and frequently too he will use the word signs for constellations. As I say, even though there is a distinct difference between these so-called galaxies, not really galaxies, but he calls them galaxies of stars, which are the constellations, and the concentrated influences of these constellations within the aura of the Earth, there's a very definite difference, but the effect of the energy is the same. We could not receive directly the energy of the zodiacal constellations, but through various transformations along the Dorje path, the path of the figure 8, as we find in around page 610 of Esoteric Astrology, these energies do reach us, and we are able to utilize them, and of course we are influenced by them. You see here, here's that Dorje diagram that I've been talking about. The beginning with, it says, one of the stars of the Great Bear, though I wonder if that's not a blind for a greater source still. And that's the transcending source, and we reach the transmitting source of three major constellations, or zodiacal constellations. Then we come to the Sun, and then we come to the seven sacred planets and the four non-sacred planets, including the Earth, which is down here. And certain of them will be transmitters of the energies of the constellations. So no matter what particular ray each of these seven and four, sacred and non-sacred, may emit, for instance, Jupiter ray 2 and 7, or Mercury ray 4 and ray 3 and ray 5, no matter what may be the ray emitted by these planets, they will also transmit the particular ray of the constellation. So let's just say that Mercury, as an esoteric ruler of Aries, will always transmit the ray 1 of Aries, and perhaps the ray 7 of Aries as well. And Mars will also transmit that ray 1 and ray 7, and Uranus as well. Of course, with Uranus, ray 1 and ray 7 are rays that are emitted by that planet, and also transmitted from the constellations. So we have many different ways of receiving the ray energies. And one of the things we did talk about, which I think was of some degree of importance, was the idea that when you're dealing with a particular planet in your horoscope, it has a definite connection with a constellation or a sign which it rules. Now, let's take the planet Jupiter. It is the orthodox ruler of both Sagittarius and Pisces. So through the planet Jupiter in your chart will come quite naturally the energies of Sagittarius and Pisces, the constellation with which Jupiter is closely affiliated exoterically. But supposing you are a disciple, then through that planet Jupiter will pass in more potent form the energies of Aquarius, which Jupiter rules esoterically. And suppose you are an initiate of some kind, let's say beyond the third degree, then the hierarchical status of Jupiter will apply, and through that planet will pass the hierarchical energies of Virgo, which in this case rules the monadic plane. So I think we can see that Jupiter will be a transmitter, in a way, of monadic energy to the initiate. So there are many subtleties here in esoteric astrology, many lines of connection which are unsuspected and which we must learn to follow. Anyway, the spiritual effect of the zodiacal constellation, says Master DK, I am now going to outline to you, let's just make sure, you know, our screen is showing, and it says that it is, so that's good. I'm now going to outline to you the spiritual effect of the passage of a soul around the wheel of experience. Now, this can be the soul in incarnation or the soul on its own plane. About the soul in incarnation, we might be able to say something about the soul on its own plane and how it experiences astrological energies. We, thus far, have less to say. So many of us cannot state definitely that we are always conscious as a soul on the higher mental plane. But we certainly can speak of our consciousness within the three lower worlds, and we know we are a soul and experiencing consciousness which is at one with the soul on its own plane, even though not always consciously so. So anyway, the spiritual effect of the passage of a soul, let's say we are all Heracles, we are all Hercules, passing around the wheel of experience, either the wheel of consciousness, if we are more advanced, or the wheel of form and personality, if we are simply moving along the path of normal evolution. We will attempt to consider, in the case of each constellation, the general effect upon a soul undergoing experience. From the orthodox angle, as he travels from Aries to Taurus via Pisces, which is the clockwise mode of traveling, and which is evolutionary but is not the spiritual mode of travel. And then as the disciple, who is awakening to soul consciousness, coming under other influences, other planetary influences, and other stellar influences in a higher way. As that disciple travels from Aries to Pisces via Taurus, this is the counterclockwise mode of traveling, and is the way we are used to considering the turning of the astrological wheel. He, the disciple, expresses then, in the highest possible manner, the qualities of his soul ray, as, in the first case, he expressed the quality of the personality ray, and let us say, at the beginning of the path of evolution, even the personality ray is not expressed because it has not really emerged. Now, there is a question whether a personality ray is somehow always present in some manner that a master can detect, or whether it is not really present until it emerges much later in evolution. But let's just say when we're dealing with modern man, there are a great many human beings of the present era who are becoming personalities, so we're dealing with millions and millions of people, and they are not, they are no longer in those very early stages of strictly physical or physical-emotional expression. They are increasingly mentally focused and are becoming an I am, a distinct Leonian unit of self-awareness with some degree of uniqueness. They have their own way. They are quite individual in their responses. They are personalities. So those are the people we are largely going to be considering. It would not do us much good. It would not be of much profit to consider those human beings who are at the strictly Lemurian or Atlantean phases of expression and who are not really individuals in the modern sense. They have not differentiated themselves from the mass. They are still subject pretty much to mass feeling, mass thought, very much Kama monastic. So as disciples, we should be increasingly under the influence of our soul ray, which should be emerging sufficiently to be noticed. It is not possible for me to be more specific, and don't we all at times regret that? DK has given us the outline of the new astrology, assuring us that if we follow it with some care and develop our thought along these lines, that we will recognize we've been given enough to really take the science of astrology farther than we thought we could in an esoteric direction. So, you know, like any good teacher, he does leave much to the effort of the student, but he points the student in the right direction. For 80 years now, we've been pointed in the right direction, and we can question the degree to which we have succeeded in fulfilling some of the indications. I seek only to give certain spiritual implications and hints, and to convey a general idea of the effect of the great illusion upon resultant conditions. We are all bewildered by that which occurs within the three worlds. I think we can think of the great illusion in a limited sense as that which occurs within the three lower worlds. And secondly, the result of the great tests which every disciple eventually undergoes as he reverses the wheel of life. And we have talked about the chakric implications of reversing the wheel when the energies which have passed through the higher centers and are expressing in the lower centers reverse their path and are drawn up into expression through the higher centers, and then the individual becomes a super diaphragmatic human being instead of a sub diaphragmatic human being, and can be considered an advanced human being. That does not mean, of course, that the lower chakras cease expression, because one would die if they did. All seven are needed, at least on a maintenance basis, and have to express in a holy manner in line with the divine plan. All are necessary. So the general bewilderment of our consciousness does have an effect upon the conditions through which we pass in the 12 houses of the horoscope. So DK, although he can give a great deal of information, says he's largely dealing in generalities at first. And here he's ready to begin. Now, you know, so many of us, we say, okay, let's get going with astrology. Let's study Aries and Taurus and Gemini and so forth. But the first 90 pages or so are of very great orienting importance, as they give us the entire overview of esoteric astrology. And they really reorient our consciousness to a new approach to this science. But of course, unless the process of becoming a disciple were occurring simultaneously with this study of astrology, it wouldn't make a great deal of sense, because we would have no human beings to which to apply the more advanced astrological interpretive methods. So we have to continue in our discipleship growth, and to notice others who are doing the same, if the new astrology is to have real applicability, and if what Master DK says is to make sense to us. Aries the Ram. Strictly speaking, what I have to say now concerns the pure first ray type. Well, you know, many of us have Aries as an important factor in our astrological chart, and we are not pure first-ray types, but he seems to be saying that through Aries, at least at this time, passes the purest example of the first ray. Aries is, excuse me, little adjustment here in the camera. Aries is the Aries is the first sign of the zodiac, and it is very much associated with the first and seventh rays. One wonders whether there will ever come a time when Aries is associated with the second or third ray. From a certain point of view, Aries is associated with the second ray, as we can think of it as representing the lamb slain from the foundations of the world, sacrificially slain, which suggests the second ray and the Christ consciousness. And it has a great deal to do with fertility, with fecund creativity, with the birthplace of ideas and so forth. This suggests the third ray. But for the moment, he considers Aries to concern the pure first-ray type. What would that be? Would that be the first-ray soul and the first-ray monad? To have the first ray soul and the first ray personality is quite rare, but possible. What is this pure first ray type? Maybe there will come a time when human beings can become a more exact embodiment of the full potential of a particular astrological constellation or sign. And then perhaps they will be the pure first-ray type, but at some point, I think in Esoteric Psychology 2, no, 1, around page 26, DK says that a pure first-ray type in incarnation would really be a disaster. Maybe I'll find that, you know, if I can, something of that nature. And let's see, Esoteric Psychology 1, page 26 or so, I believe it says something like that here. As to first-ray egos, here it is. There are no pure first-ray types on the planet. So this particular statement, Esoteric Psychology, page 26, volume 1, relates very much to what we've just been talking about, the pure first-ray type. And yet DK tells us there are no pure first-ray types on the planet. And obviously, there are first-ray souls, and perhaps some first-ray souls and personalities, but I think what he really means is to have the first-ray soul and the first-ray monad would tend to make you the pure first-ray type. Okay, now, strictly speaking, what I have to say now concerns the pure first-ray type, because Aries is the zodiacal sign through which the first ray of will and power reaches our planetary life. Does it also... is it also the sign through which the first ray of will and power reaches the entire solar systemic life and other planetary lives? Of this we cannot be entirely certain. And, excuse me, it's not the only conduit for the first ray because at this time, because Leo and Capricorn are also signs through which the first ray reaches our planetary life. But notice that he started to talk about signs. He started talking about constellations, now he's talking about signs. I think we have to get used to the fact that these will be intermixed with no obvious hint to us as to why the change in terminology is occurring where it does. Such pure types are rare indeed, and at this period of evolution, well nigh unknown. Well, someone knows about them. Perhaps the masters do. Even though, basically, DK said, as to first-ray egos, there are no pure first-ray types on our planet. Well, he's talking about first-ray egos there. When he talks about the pure first-ray type here, in Esoteric Astrology, is he talking about something other than a first-ray ego? I think he must be including the monad, I would think there. The monad is included, I would say. And only 1/12 of monads in our solar system are on the first ray. He says there are 5 billion first ray monads, and many of them are not in incarnation. Anyway, well-nigh unknown, we can accept that idea. Was Alexander, was Julius Caesar, was Genghis Khan, were they pure types on the first ray? Well, they certainly exemplified the first ray in a manner, in a dramatic manner. Most people are governed by their personality ray, and as the present first ray types are expressing through personalities which are on all the rays, which means when he talks about types, he must mean soul or monad or soul and monad. I would simply ask you to consider that what I have to say from the angle of character effects. Effects in that structure of conduct and thought and feeling which characterize us. I would simply ask you to consider what I have to say from the angle of character effects of problems presented to the individual and to others, and of quality unfolded. In other words, let us think about the human being in the three worlds principally, and these energies of Aries, how they influence that expressive human being in the three worlds. It is well nigh impossible to be more explicit until such a time as the science of the rays has been further developed. Well, let's see, the day of expert diagnosis is coming, but not immediately, and he tells us that one day we will be capable of diagnosing the rays in an expert manner. For the moment, we have to use an educated guess with respect to ourselves and others. So the full exposition of astrology cannot really be unfolded before the science of the rays is further developed. The astrologer must ascertain the ray type before he will be able to cast the adequate horoscope of the soul. And, you know, again, is this the soul on its own plane or the soul in incarnation? I think for the time being, it is the soul in incarnation. So if we know our soul ray, we can look at our horoscope and see how that soul ray could be expressing within our personality life in a manner which aligns properly with the intention of the soul. My remarks are therefore general and not specific, and are universal and not particular. DK is using the occult method, and he is descending from the general towards the particular, and we have to have patience because we must know the great generalities before the particularities can really be put in a meaningful context. And of course, so many people just love the particularities before they even get the big picture. So we will be patient with this presentation of esoteric astrology, realizing that it may not answer every particular question we have about ourselves or about particular people, but the day will come, and I'm sure, or I think so, that following 2025, when he says he will again begin writing about esoteric astrology, I think at that point much more will be given. My remarks are therefore general and not specific, and are universal and are not particular. I impose no doctrine. Obviously, he's giving us room to work out this great science for ourselves. He doesn't want to put our mind in a straitjacket and have yet one more system which gathers its combative adherents. I impose no doctrine. I indicate phases of speculation which might prove illuminating and fruitful. So he's opening our speculative, our intelligent, semi-illumined speculative mind so that we can venture into this science with his assistance. Excuse me. Aries is one of the constellations of the cardinal cross of the heavens. This is the cross of God the Father, and therefore of the incarnating monad, the cross of the monad. The monad undergoes a great evolution, and the monad had an extensive pre-evolution before the individualization process. We're told that the history of the monad is an amazing thing. And my own speculations on this show that we don't know how long the universe, our particular universe, has been in expression, but we can be assured that whatever we are as a being was a participant in all of that earlier form of expression. So the monad, maybe not the monad on the cosmic etheric levels, but the essence of being as the monad certainly was a participant. God the Father, in this case, I think we can look at the planetary logos, or perhaps the solar logos. The monad has its definite relation to the planetary logos, of course, but in a way, the monad is that which finds its home within the sun, though perhaps not, I think not, its ultimate home. The cross of God the Father, this cross, it is the expression of will or power as it expresses itself through the great creative process. Well, we're down here, the monad is on the cosmic physical plane, the etheric part of the cosmic physical plane. So being in the realm of etheric physical nature, it is about manifestation and what the will manifest etherically, physically, part of the great creative process. And of course, Aries, the fecund Aries, the fount of ideation, is much involved with the great creative process. So this cross that we can only really think about, because none of us is initiates of the fourth degree or beyond, we are not able to speak from direct experience about life upon the cardinal cross. We can speak from personal experience about life upon the cardinal cross as a human being, but that's not the true cardinal cross of being. When the initiate, as we shall later see, transfers himself onto the cardinal cross from which he descended when coming into incarnation and mounted in its place the common immutable cross, he no longer identifies himself with form or even with soul, but with the will of divinity and with the eternal plan and purpose. So DK is saying, okay, we have forgotten our life upon the cardinal cross, but as a true monad, we exist upon the cardinal cross even now, but an aspect, an emanated aspect of that monad has descended into lower perception and is working now up in the midst of many environmental changes on many subplanes. The mutable cross is the cross of many changes of great and constant mutability. But and so until we have monadic experience or reclaim it, even though as a monad we are upon that cardinal cross, we cannot speak of it in our direct experience. But following the third initiation, increasingly and beyond the fourth, we shall again know consciously what life upon the cardinal cross means. And of course, the great beings, there are only three crosses, the great beings like the planetary and solar logos and the logos of Sirius and other still vaster beings are upon the cardinal cross of the heavens, the higher reaches of which we cannot possibly imagine. Really, life upon the fixed cross is of shortest duration. It really lasts from the first initiation through the third, and that's about it. You know, there's still vestiges of fixed cross response on the way to the fourth initiation, but the cardinal cross is increasingly influential. At the fourth initiation, no cross is entirely influential. The man steps off all crosses, in a way, and following the fourth initiation, he begins to mount the cardinal cross, even though at some points it seems to suggest that following the third he does, but there's a definite statement by DK about the fourth degree initiate not being on the cardinal cross and not being on the fixed cross. Okay, when the initiate transfers himself onto the cardinal cross from which he descended when coming into incarnation, and that means when becoming a soul on the higher mental plane, while still remaining a monad, becoming a soul while still remaining the monad, that's the mystery, that's the secret of emanation, and mounted in its place the common or mutable cross, he no longer identifies himself with form or even with soul. So following the fourth initiation, when the soul body on the higher mental plane is shattered, broken, dissolved, burned, you know, perforated, whatever method you choose to destroy a causal body, then there is no longer identification with that soul body. There may be some identification with higher forms of consciousness, but the main identification is as being, which has consciousness. That's a whole philosophical issue. So once we transcend that soul identification, the rising monad, which has been immersed in incarnation, realizes that it is the divine will. It is identified with the will of divinity and with the eternal plan projected by the planetary logos, as received from the solar logos, as received from the cosmic logos, as received from the one about whom not may be said, and on and on and on. The eternal plan is probably universal in its scope and purpose, but we can't reach that far. We have to be quite happy with being able to fathom something of the plan of Sanat Kumara, the expression in incarnation of the of our planetary logos. On the cardinal cross, the eternal plan and purpose becomes the initiate's plan and purpose. It becomes his plan and purpose. He knows no other in a sense which is unknown, even to the initiate of the third degree. And I think, you know, if we look at the esoteric astrology book, and we turn, for instance, to page 332, I just got to find that. Oh, that's esoteric psychology. I don't want that. I want astrology. Whoops. All right, that's not going to be... Let's just see what I can do there. We will see that under Aries and under the description of the disciple and initiate, we have here recognition and work with the plan, will. So this is a chart which describes the evolution of man in relation to zodiacal signs, and the highest expression of Aries here, recognition and work with the plan, will. Okay, now let me get rid of that and get it back again. Okay. Yes. So the initiate is identifying with the eternal plan and purpose, let's just say, in this case, of the planetary logos. It becomes his plan and purpose. He knows no other. I have no other life intention. It's a very powerful mantra which we use in the reappearance of the Christ meditation. He knows no other plan and purpose. And even the initiate of the third degree, who is beginning to really sense the plan, even though perhaps not yet the purpose, does not know the manner in which this high initiate, who is truly on the cardinal cross, understands the plan and purpose. He then enters into the council chamber of God. Well, you just about have to be, let's just call it a released monad of the sixth degree, and some fifth degree initiates. Some, but mostly along the first ray line. He then enters into the council chamber of God, but this is usually the prerogative, God the planetary logos in this case. Notice what God means here to the Tibetan. It's not the one and only being of cosmos, is not the absolute deity of Blavatsky. It's a special case of that one identity, the planetary logos. He becomes a part of the conclave, at Shambhala. Now, there's a word, conclave. We're going to have one again in the year 2025, and it will be a decisive one in preparing the plans for the actual externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. He functions no longer simply as a member of the hierarchy upon the mental plane. And of course, let us remember that hierarchy is now also functioning upon the Buddhic plane. In 1925 or so, many of the ashrams focused on the Buddhic intuitive plane and became much more interrelated. He can now function through all three world centers as a monad, through humanity, the hierarchy, and through Shambhala. So we're talking about a very high stage of initiation of life upon the cardinal cross. Life upon the cardinal cross for the sixth degree initiate. Okay. Aries initiates the cycle of manifestation. Well, the word initiate, is definitely related to the first ray pouring through Aries. Associated with Aries and the first ray is this particular quality of the will called the will to initiate. Associated with the seventh ray, which is also one of the rays transmitted through Aries, is the will to express. Another way of looking at that is the will to manifest, the seventh ray, the great ray of manifestation. But always Aries is beginning that which plunges the spirit into matter. Let form again be sought. So Aries is the seed descending into the denser realms of perception there to propel and develop the different types of forms through which spirit can express. Aries is very, very identified with the spirit. Sometimes I think of the soul of India, which is this ruled by Aries, and its great love of the concept of the absolute self, the Atman, the Brahman, the Parabrahman. All of these have a relationship with the first sign, Aries. Aries initiates the cycle of manifestation. All souls, as individual entities, come into human incarnation for the first time in the sign of Cancer. Now, remember, we did discuss it earlier, that the first incarnation is actually taken in Pisces, and that there is a kind of a mass incarnation taken in Cancer. But now he's going to tell us something important, because Cancer does represent the dense physical plane, just like of the five non-sacred planets. It is the moon which represents the dense physical body, and the earth, the etheric, and Mars, the astral, and Pluto, I believe, the mental, and the sun, the unified personality elemental, and the factor of ahamkara, or sort of a false individual identity. Okay. So all souls as individual entities come into human incarnation for the first time in the sign Cancer, but do look that up in the book, because it talks about the very first individual incarnation as taken in Pisces, and a kind of a mass incarnation taken in Cancer. Matter of fact, maybe I can find that, because it would be worth confirming that. And here we are. Notice here, this is an Esoteric Astrology 131. We're getting close to that page. Let's see here. He's talking about the six potencies which produce release from the bondage of form. entered into and cancer, as far as the mass of humanity is concerned, and by this I mean the birth of the human kingdom, and as in Pisces, as far as the individual is concerned. So, okay, this is, and yet he does seem to tell us that the first individual incarnation, as individual entities, occurs in Cancer, but it can be as individual entities as part of the mass. And as when we're dealing with Pisces, we have the first, as far as the individual is concerned, it takes some sorting out, I will admit, but I think we should have those two signs in mind. And remember the very interesting mantram associated with Pisces, go forth into matter. It sounds very much like the individual fish is beginning to swim in the ocean of being, the ocean of the lower worlds. And with Cancer, the blind unit is lost. These are early mantrams associated with both Cancer and Pisces. I would say both, in a way, ruled by Neptune, the great ocean, and representing a kind of engulfing of the individual consciousness by all the circumstantial energies in the lower worlds, especially the physical world. So anyway, we'll have to sort that out. But it says here, coming into human incarnation for the first time in the sign, all souls as individual entities come into human incarnation for the first time in the sign of Cancer, and then he also talks about Pisces in the individual sense, emerging as mental entities in the sign Aries. This sign Aries does rule the head, and the head is always associated with the brain and with mentality and with the mind. So there's a very simple descent discussed here. The mental entity in the sign Aries as emotional desire entities in the sign Taurus. And we know the Buddha, as far as a human being is concerned, the archetypal Taurus came to humanity to help release humanity from the spell of desire, lower desire and emotion. And emerging as vital entities in the sign Gemini, taking the physical form in Cancer. So, you know, I suppose we could look at the rulers there and associate them in some way. We could say, well, Mars can be associated with the mind, which indeed it rules the five senses and the concrete mind. It can be. That's the ruler of Aries, orthodoxly. We could say that Venus, ruling the power of attraction, can be associated with emotion and desire. And although that doesn't cover the higher aspects of Venus by any means, the magnetism is associated with emotion and desire. We could look at Mercury, the orthodox ruler of Gemini, and say it is associated with the etheric body and with all of the energy connections via the nadis, subtle filaments of energy connecting all aspects of the etheric body. That's very Mercurian. And we could look at the moon as the dead form, which in a way our dense physical body is. It is the form built of substance of an earlier time, an earlier solar system. And it is strictly responsive in its nature to higher energies. It has no particular will of its own. It's inert in that sense. So we have then Mars, Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. And we can line them up, mental body Aries, emotional body Taurus, etheric body Gemini, dense physical body Cancer. Okay, this is an involutionary subjective cycle. So he's talking about the descent of the soul in incarnation into its vehicles in the days which precede conscious evolution. It is the descent of the soul gradually into the depths of the human substance. And there is, of course, there is a mental body even in the very beginning, however slightly formed it may be. There is certainly an emotional body that will undergo greater growth, and there is an etheric physical body, and that's where the beginning happens. Thus they emerge, the souls emerge, into the ocean of physical plane existence. Notice the Piscean, Cancerian imagery there of the ocean, into the world of matter, water and matter being equivalent. Okay, water and matter are equivalent. Yet the first impulse to descend, presumably, is awakened in Aries. For Aries is the place where the initial idea to institute activity takes form. And this really applies to all levels of Aresian development. Aries gets the idea. It touches that subtle source, which we call ideation, and from the idea comes the suggestion for an action to carry it out. So Aries is the place where the initial idea to institute activity takes form, and in a way Aries then rules the descent into matter, that form again be sought. And this statement is most important about Aries. It is the birthplace of ideas. And a true idea is in reality a spiritual impulse taking form. This is an excellent definition of a true idea. An idea is a being incorporeal, having neither shape nor substance, but giving shape to inchoate matter. So a true idea is in reality a spiritual impulse taking form, subjective and objective. In other words, there are subjective forms and there are objective forms, more tangible, and they all begin with an idea. As a matter of fact, in a way, every being is an idea. Every human being really is an idea. There originates the response of the soul to the highest aspect or quality of deity, because there appears the will to incarnate. So Aries is definitely associated with the will to incarnate the idea, which is the human soul. An idea in the mind of God is taking form, and this all is stimulated by the first ray. The first ray aspect of the monad, remember that there are three aspects to the monad, will, wisdom, and activity, and the will aspect is the first ray aspect of the monad. The first ray aspect of the monad responding to the first aspect of deity evokes response from the first ray aspect of the soul, which I think we can look at that as the jewel in the lotus particularly, whereas the second aspect would be the petals still inchoate and the permanent atoms. They're not exactly permanent atoms. What they are is the mental unit and then the astral and physical permanent atoms, and there the mental unit would carry the first ray aspect of the third ray aspect of the soul. But the first ray aspect of the monad responding to the first aspect of deity evokes response from the first ray aspect of the soul, and the first steps towards incarnation is taken on that plane in the system which is the mental plane. And we think of the not only let form again be sought, but we think of the idea associated with Aries, I come forth from the soul, and upon the plane of mind I rule, and from the plane of mind I rule. Well, it'll be a long time before the soul, initially descending in incarnation, rules anything, but Aries rules this first phase of an idea, which is the soul, which is really the spirit, taking form upon the mental plane. Aries awakens the will to reach the lowest and there control. to know the uttermost and thus face all experience. Thus runs the ancient statement. So this whole idea that form again be sought and also go forth into matter, you know, in a way Aries and Pisces are one in this respect. One day they will be, I think, one sign, just the way certain of the signs will coalesce. There is the first ray and the seventh ray connected with Aries. The highest and the lowest will meet. The seventh is the lowest, the first ray is the highest, the mantram for the seventh ray, the highest and the lowest meet. So there is this Vulcanian will to descend through all of the planes of matter in the dense physical body of the solar logos, or more properly, the dense physical body of the planetary logos, reaching the lowest, there to control, as Aries is a first ray sign, conveying the will of control, and to know the uttermost, to know every possible experience, and thus to face all experiences. All right, I think we are reaching the point. We have begun with Aries, and we've reached page 93. So this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 42. From page 90 to 93, we are discussing the first sign or constellation of the zodiac, its association with will, with initiating the process of incarnation from the monadic level as well, let us say, you know. The first ray aspect of the monad is involved here. And so, definitely, DK is saying that Aries is associated with the first ray aspect of the monad, which is will, you know. Taurus with wisdom, I would assume, and Gemini with activity. Will, wisdom, and activity. And when we look at this, Fellowship Cosmic Fire, and we look at these diagrams, and let's just take a look at this one, which is the one we often use. It's an important one. Here should be will, wisdom, and activity. Will, wisdom, and activity, and Aries is connected with that. Aries will also be connected, I suspect, with the Atmic plane, although interestingly, the Atmic plane is ruled by Libra, so there's sort of the first ray Aries in will received by Libra in Atma. But Aries goes straight down to the first ray aspect of the soul, which is the jewel in the lotus, or the central fire, which is latent at the time, though present, the time of individualization, and then descends to the mental unit which carries the will power, even though it is a mental unit, carries will, and then descends all the way down so that the spirit may know the uttermost. All righty. Then let us say the great invocation together, this time not in a rushed manner, hopefully. We had a little bit of problem with the last two. Okay, because strange things were happening. And Mercury was retrograde, though it is not now. This is the first day it is not. Hopefully we'll do better. The Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, that's it. And we will resume with Esoteric Astrology Adventure 43, and we will be working with the first sign, the foremost example of the first ray of the pure first ray type, which doesn't really exist yet in incarnation, fortunately, he says, Aries. Okay, until then, bye-bye.